Good afternoon. My name is Morteza and I'm a postdoctoral fellow. I'm 2 minutes out of time. I'm a postdoctoral fellow in USU and my talk is entitled Estimation of Soil Water Content Using Short-Wave Infrared Remote Sensing. I want to acknowledge my other collaborators, Scott Jones and Stephen Bialowski of USU and William Philbot in Cornell University. So as you know, the surface soil moisture is a fundamental state variable and it controls many environmental processes such as infiltration, runoff, evaporation, etc. So it's very crucial for hydrology and environmental science to monitor and measure spatial and temporal patterns of soil moisture. Fortunately, we have these days satellite remote sensing techniques which provide larger scale estimates of soil water content. Because electromagnetic radiation of soils in various wavelengths, mainly in optical, thermal, and microwave bands, show a correlation with surface soil moisture. The microwave methods our most promising method for monitoring surface soil moisture, especially in global scale, because they have good penetration depth and the measurements are not impeded by clouds and darkness. But the disadvantage of microwave methods is their spatial resolution and is inherently coarse compared to optical and thermal methods. So besides the microwave methods for estimation of soil moisture, optical and thermal methods and thermal optical and thermal bands are essential for remote sensing of soil moisture, and they usually are used for downscaling of microwave data. By this motivation, our goal in this study was to develop a method for remote sensing of soil moisture, especially in the optical bands. And we aim to develop a physically based method, at the same time a practical method. Such a method is kind of lacking in literature, because most of the method in optical bands are based on regression models, and they are empirical with no physical origin, and so they are always in need of calibration. And there are a few physically based methods, but they are always they always require difficult to determine input information. So I'm going to follow in a little bit in theory of this this method we developed. What the optical sensors measure is reflectance, as you know, and reflectance is a portion of reflected light to the total incident light. And if we consider the reflectance from soil surface and soil volume, it's going to be a function of soil properties and also soil water content, because the change in soil water content will change the absorption and scattering properties of soil. So we used a theory developed by Kubelka and Monk in 1931. And it's a physically based model, but a very simple model. It considers two light flux, one forward flux and one forward flux I and backward flux J, and it considers two processes of absorption and scattering in soil. So it considers a K absorption coefficient and a S scattering coefficient of soil, and these parameters would be a function of soil water content. So they came up with two differential equations like these. And if somebody solves these equations, it can obtain the reflectance out of this model. So we use this model. I didn't want to show all mathematics here because of the time limit. I just showed the final model we obtained after some mathematical procedures. So this is the final model we proposed. Actually, it's a model for relating the theta soil water content to the reflectance in terms of a transform reflectance. We have the relationship of the transform reflectance with the original reflectance R in the green box. So we have soil water content as a function of reflectance here, and there is four parameters in this model. Theta S is saturated water content, and well, actually the all parameters are physically defined as the tau and tau S and tau D are the transform reflectance as saturated and dry soil, and you have a rho, which is a relative scattering coefficient, which is the a relative strength of scattering coefficient of dry soil to scattering coefficient of saturated soil. If you look at the model and if you look at the absorption capability of water in shortwave infrared bands, we can, based on the definition of rho, we came up that in these bands, the scattering coefficient of water would be much smaller than the scattering coefficient of dry soil because of, as I said, because of the strong water absorption here in Swier bands. So in Swier bands, the rho, parameter rho, is going to be around 1 based on theory. So our proposed model, which was nonlinear, is reduced to a linear, a simple linear model like this. So we got a linear relationship between soil water content and transform reflectance, and this is in theory, and we are going to explore the measured data to see how it works. So again, we got a nonlinear model like this. This is going to be applicable for all optical bands, and we have a linear model that is applicable only for shortwave infrared bands. Well, for validation of this model, I got two data sets, one from Lowell and Anser 2002, and another from Whiting et al. 2004, and both of them are like spectral reflectance measurement in soil samples in laboratory. They are not satellite remotes. So Lowell and Anser got four different soils from different taxonomy class of aridisol, andisol, molisol, and entisol, and they measured the spectrum at different water levels. We evaluated the data in six different bands. Corresponding to Landsat ETM bands, which were band 1 blue, band 2 green, band 3 red, band 4 near infrared, and bands 5 and 7, which were SWIR. Here you can see the data of transform reflectance versus soil water content, which are the data points, and the lines are the best fit of the nonlinear model, because I showed the first four bands, like band 1, 2, 3, and 4. So and you can see that the nonlinear model works well for most cases, except the blue band in andisol and molisol. And if you look at the SWIR data, it's interesting that the predicted linear model between transform reflectance and soil water content is being verified by the data. And you can see that for the three soils, it's showing a linear relationship. And for only for the andisol, it's still a little nonlinear, but it's better in the band 7. Well, I got another data set from Whiting et al. 2004. Well, actually, it was the low-level answer data I showed in previous slide. It was just like one sample, but the difference here is like it was for two different areas, for large areas, and the white team collected soil samples, many soil samples from two large areas. One in California, it was 25 square kilometers, and another in Spain was 27 square kilometers. And I showed the all data here for band 7 and 5, and you can see for both soils the linear trend is showing the linear trend. And I use this data to see to what degree we can use a one single calibration equation for a large area, because as you know, the model is like sensitive to soil properties, and the scattering and absorption coefficient would be just for one soil, but we have many different soils in an area, and you can see some scattering around the line, but it's still doing okay. And if you look at the quantitative evaluation criteria like RMSE, you can see the for the global and answer data, the single soil samples, it was all less than 4% accuracy in band 7 using the linear model. And for the Whiting et al. Data, just using one calibration equation, we got around 7% accuracy. Well, it's not really good for many applications, but consider we just had one calibration equation. It could be better if we divided the area by some subregions and using multiple calibration equations. So this is the performance of the linear model in SWIR bands and for different soils. Okay, I'm almost done. Conclusion is there exists a linear relationship between transform reflectance of soil and soil water content in shortwave infrared bands. And the model we developed is a physical model and a very practical one. So, and the parameters are all physically defined. So somebody can link the physical properties of soil, such as soil texture and color and taxonomic class, to the parameters to find the parameters. And yeah, the link would enhance the model's applicability using like existing soil database like NRCS soil maps. Well, I was thinking about another calibration method without any need of ground measurements. It's going to be like collecting a time series of reflectance data in one location and transforming the reflectance data. And if this is long enough, and we make sure this is from for whole saturation, from dry soil to saturated soil, so the parameters of the linear model would be the maximum and minimum transform reflectance. Without any need of ground measurement, you can calibrate this because this is a linear model. And the next step would be actually the application of this model in large scale or satellite scale with the challenges like we have high degree of heterogeneity, we have vegetation that is always a problem for optical methods, we have surface roughness and topography and everything, so it should be tested for large scale application. Thank you for your attention.
We have time for one or two quick questions.
Were you able to explain why anisole and monosole acted weirdly in this model?
Yeah.
I'll repeat the question.
You asked me why the anisole and monosole. Yeah, the model did not work well for those soils. Yeah, we like Well, I didn't discuss. We have a. This is a Kubelkov-Monk theory. It's just for volume reflectance. It doesn't describe the surface reflectance. So that error in the in blue bands is for surface reflectance, which is a which has a positive correlation with soil water content. So in like I added that in like I'm writing a paper for journal. I added that modification and it's going to capture the errors. So it's just because of neglecting the first net reflectance.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.